Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Friday, January 2nd, 2015. The National Election Commission says elections will be held in June.
The election will be conducted on 30th of June 2015, as stated in the Act, Section 15, Subsection 1.
But a senior member of SPLM in opposition says that does not make any sense.
So how can you claim that you are going to have elections in June? It is not feasible. It is actually just a joke of the year. It is actually unacceptable because nobody will be focusing in having elections, even if there is security in the areas.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. South Sudan's National Election Commission, or NEC, has set June 30th as the date for this year's general elections. NEC chairman Abednego Akok told reporters at a press conference in Juba yesterday that
the commission have been deliberating on the processes of the elections in 2015, as stated in the Constitution and the National Elections Act 2012. The election will be conducted on 30th of June 2015, as stated in the Act, Section 15, Subsection 1.
The announcement brought an outcry from opposition political figures. Former political detainee Ezekiel Lolgat-Kwod, who is now Deputy Foreign Affairs Secretary for Riek Machar's SPLM in opposition, says holding elections when millions of people are suffering because of the year-old conflict in the country is unacceptable.
So how can you claim that you are going to have elections in June? It is not feasible. It is actually just a joke of the year. It is actually unacceptable because nobody will be focusing in having elections, even if there is security in the areas that they are claiming to control. You cannot conduct election. The money that you are using to run the election, you should actually be providing this money to feed your people.
Gatkwad says the government would not be able to organize safe and fair elections because it does not control many parts of the country.
They are just only in Bor. In the other areas, they are not there. Jonglei is not Bor. Then you take Unity State, they are only in Bentiu. In Upper Nile State, they are only in Malakal. And the rest of Upper Nile State, they are not there. In Western Equatoria, you have seen the security chief was gunned down in Mundri. And then in Eastern Equatoria, General Martin Kenyi is active everywhere. And also in Central Equatoria. Even in Northern Bagazal and Warab, there are certain activities you will never access where the population is and where you would be able to conduct election unless you want to conduct election to elect mayors in the cities.
Former Justice Minister John Luke, who was also detained by the government after fighting broke out in Juba on December 15, 2013, says until the conflict is resolved, even holding state elections would be difficult.
Even elections for governors who were removed in some of the states cannot be held because of insecurity. That is true for the governor of Lakes State, who is still there now. And no election could be held there because the National Election Commission said there is insecurity there that cannot allow elections to be run. And that insecurity is intensifying.
Luke says the National Election Commission has said itself that insecurity is a problem in several states, including Jonglei and Unity.
So you can see all those difficulties. I think to insist on elections being held by June is not sensible at all. The best would be for the country to focus on achieving peace.
Akok admits organizing elections won't be easy.
There are many challenges. There are many challenges facing the commission. And we strongly request the government to provide all basic needs.
He did not provide details of what that basic needs might be. The government announced last week that it has approved 1.5 billion South Sudanese pounds, or about $517 million, to fund elections. That announcement brought an outcry from opposition leader Lama Kol. He said the millions of dollars earmarked for elections should be spent on South Sudan's suffering people. But Information Minister Michael Makuei said the country's constitution says elections have to be held this year. We checked the transitional constitution. It does not stipulate that election must be held by a certain date, but it does say President Salva Kiir's term will come to an end by July 9th this year. The constitution also says that if no election has been held by then, the presidency will be considered vacant, and the vice president will take over until a vote is organized. A Juba-based think tank says the government does not have enough money to hold election in June of this year. The managing director of the Ebony Center, Lual Deng, says the Kiir administration is better off amending the country's transitional constitution to extend the mandate of the parliament and the presidential term. Lual says the continuing insecurity in some parts of the country could pose serious difficulties for electoral officials. He says he does understand, though, that Juba is racing against time.
The concern is to avoid what I call constitutional crisis point. That will be July 9th, 2015. If there's no elections or if there are no legal framework to rectify the situation, then you reach a crisis point. That's what I would think is the motivating factor behind. The conditions are not right to conduct elections. There are alternatives. You can amend the national legislature, can amend the constitution to extend its tenure for another 36 months beginning July 9th, 2015. And cost of extending the National Assembly would be about 250 million Sudanese pounds over 3 years. If you take the cost, the salaries, the benefits, the associated buildings, the staff, and all those things. So it's much, much cheaper in terms of economics to extend, not to conduct election, but extend.
Yes, let me take you back a little bit. You were saying the conditions are not favorable for election. What conditions are we talking about here?
Economic conditions and the security situation. The whole of Upper Nile will be near impossible to conduct election unless you want to conduct it in towns, in places controlled by the government. But then the majority of our people are living in rural areas, so it will be difficult to reach them. Politically also, the country is divided. Countries at war itself. You don't want to do that. And this is a quarrel within a family. It's not like war between the North before the war of liberation. This is purely a civil war, a quarrel within the family. So that politically is not, in my view, is not appropriate. But thirdly, economically, the country is facing economic difficulties. So I would suspend $1.5 billion to extend the tenure of the national legislature, and I will use the remaining, the 1.26, so to speak, a billion South Sudanese pounds, in improving roads, and in that way you would be able to improve your economic situation. I don't see where you will be getting that amount of money at this stage.
There are some analysts in the region who are thinking that the government is doing that so that they can get legitimacy and continue, you know, being in power. What are your thoughts on that?
Yes, they are right by saying, look, they want to avoid the constitutional crisis where they will not have legitimacy. But you can do that legitimacy through a legitimate national legislature before its tenure comes to end. The executive should be really working, because this is the president who initiates amendment of the constitution. So the president, the executive should spend more their time in working out amendments, necessary amendments, to provide legal frameworks to give them legitimacy. And that legitimacy will come through extension of the national legislature and also the time of the president.
Yes. You work in Juba, and your job is to look at the situation, do focus and do analysis, and, you know, send out information that helps people to make informed decisions. Now, how would you describe the political arena? Is it a level playing arena for political activities in South Sudan?
Well, the rebels will not accept. So you cannot talk of a level field where people can play equally. They will say, look, government has more competitive advantage, has the resources, has the army, and you can't conduct election in that environment. I will not be engaged in that discussion, more on focusing on the elections and whether the conditions are conducive to conduct. And I've just told you, conditions are not favorable.
That's Lual Deng, the managing director of Ebony Center, a think tank based in Juba. He was speaking to me from the state of Virginia here in the United States. At a peace rally yesterday in Kwajok, organized by Warap state officials, leaders called on the youth to work for peace and shun war. National Petroleum and Mining Minister Stephen Diu Dao also delivered a New Year's message from President Kiir. For VOA News, Antino Monuda Uel has details from Kwajok.
Reading from a letter by the President, Dao told the crowd, Mr. Kiir wants all Sudanese to work hard for peace and encourage them to farm the land so they can feed their families.
All of us must work hard for peace, love in South Sudan.
At the same rally, Deputy Minister for Culture, Youth and Sport, Jasmine Nyapon, customers urged women to reject violence. And she hired the nation's youth to take a lead in restoring peace to the country.
If you go either to the side of the government or to the side of the rebels, you found that most of these victims are the youth. The youth are the one dying.
And Nyapon says women must play their part to help the country.
So I would like to remind our women that they should not sleep. This is the war within and between us. We should actually come with initiative in order to stop all this unnecessary killing.
20-year-old Ajagata says women want the war to end because they are losing sons, brothers and husbands to violence on a daily basis. Speaking in Arabic, she says, sisters, mothers, let us sit and talk with our sons and husbands and tell them that we do not need more trouble in South Sudan. William Dengakon, a senior member of Warab State Youth Union, says, young people have the power to end the ongoing war if they want to.
If we say no, nobody can create his own youth to fight. If we say no, nobody will use us. So I'm really urging my brothers and sisters that we are the strong people that can stop all this mess happening in South Sudan.
More than 500 people attended the rally, many of whom clapped and cheered when the speakers called on all men, women, and children to work for peace. For VOA News, I'm Santino Manut in Kwajok.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, a closer look at Kenya's security law. That story is coming up after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
would you be comfortable being a blood donor to help medical patients that need transfusions?
I do not have any difficulty doing that because once it saves life, I'm a donor myself. I've done it for more than 10 years.
Yeah, definitely. I would be more comfortable with that because we need to save each other's life. We love people around and then we love them to live longer. So why not to do that? Definitely, I will have to do that to save someone's life.
Yeah, most definitely. Because if you donate your blood to someone who is in need of it, that's like you've helped, you've given someone life. Yeah, that's like if I got what it takes, if I got the quantity of blood that takes to donate someone, then most definitely I would do that. I would donate my blood.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. Kenya's High Court has suspended some of the more controversial measures of a national security law following a challenge from opposition lawmakers and a rights group. VOA's Gabe Joslo reports the ruling Friday affects restrictions on media and refugees as well as new powers granted to the police.
High Court Judge George Odunga suspended 8 clauses in Kenya's Security Law Act pending a further hearing. Among the clauses was a provision that granted the police the right to detain suspects without charge for 360 days, a measure imposing harsh fines on media outlets that broadcast images deemed offensive by the state, and another clause that put a limit on the number of refugees allowed in the country. Opposition lawmakers and the Kenya National Commission on Human Rights brought the challenge against the law to the High Court. KNCHR Commissioner Suzanne Shatika Chivusia told VOA some of the provisions were oppressive and in violation of the Constitution, noting the restrictions on refugees.
The import of that is that some would have to be taken back to places where their life could be under danger. I don't know how implementation of that law would have occurred because either way, it would have violated the rights of a genuine refugee.
Kenya already hosts more than 500,000 refugees, mostly from Somalia. The new law would limit the total number to 150,000. The initial bill was passed in mid-December during a chaotic session of parliament in which lawmakers threw punches and tossed papers on the floor of the National Assembly. Chibusia says the law was approved without enough public input or time for lawmakers to debate.
If we are going to allow flawed processes to result into enactment of legislation, that is going to be a very dangerous precedent.
Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta, who signed the law shortly after it was passed, has denied it violates the Constitution and has said all the amendments are in the interest of national security. The ruling Jubilee Coalition pushed for the new security laws to combat the rising threat of terrorism in Kenya, following attacks claimed by or attributed to the Somali militant group Al-Shabaab. In the worst attack, Al-Shabaab fighters assaulted Nairobi's Westgate shopping mall in September 2013 and killed more than 60 people. Gabe Josselow, VOA News, Nairobi.
The West African Ebola outbreak began just a year ago in Guinea, but health officials still cannot say when it will be contained. The International Federation of the Red Cross and Red Crescent Society say while the progress has been made, much more needs to be done to prevent a relapse. More than 20,000 cases have been reported and nearly 8,000 deaths. VOA's Joe DiCapua reports.
The Red Cross's Catherine Mueller gives an assessment of the Ebola epidemic in Guinea, Liberia, and Sierra Leone.
The Ebola outbreak is not under control yet. We do see some leveling off of cases for Liberia, for example. However, we've seen it before that somebody attends a funeral, they come back, they're infected, they infect their village, and cases spike. So it really doesn't take much to have another increase in cases.
Mueller is the IFRC's Africa Communications Manager. She worries that people may become complacent after hearing that the number of new cases has slowed in some places.
That's actually one of the things that we're concerned about, is once people in the country start seeing this leveling off of cases, that they're figuring, yay, we're beating this thing, and it's too early to say that. This is the new normal of living with Ebola, that it's just not going to go away.
Part of the organization's efforts include going to remote areas in the three hardest-hit countries.
So far, our volunteers have reached almost 3.5 million people with their messages about how to protect themselves and how to stop the spread. We're having some success, but we're also finding that still a lot of those messages are not being heard. So we really need to figure out how to talk to these communities in a way that they'll understand and actually implement the messaging. Talking with the religious leaders, the community leaders, people who are really well-respected, traditional healers, and getting the messages shared by them.
Mueller says some of the major obstacles to raising awareness are fear and mistrust, both of the governments and some Westerners.
A lot of them had never seen white people before, so white people came in when Ebola came in, and communities are connecting the two, and in a lot of cases are blaming the Western aid workers who are there for bringing Ebola into their communities. So those are some of the challenges that we're up against.
And there are logistical challenges.
We definitely do not have enough beds to be able to support all the people who would need them. What we're also noticing, though, is that there's this geographical spread of the virus. So we go in and we set up a treatment center in Kenema, Sierra Leone, for example, and then the virus has spread to other remote communities. And that actually makes it harder to manage, because if we move the resources from one area to another, cases start spiking in that original area.
The International Federation of the Red Cross and Red Crescent Societies is asking its partners to expand their operations in the rural areas. Mueller says amid the crisis, there are success stories.
People are surviving this disease. At our treatment center in Kenema in Sierra Leone, we've had more than 200 people discharged from the treatment center. Now, not all of them have been confirmed Ebola patients, but a good majority have been. We've also had local nurses who have survived, and they're now actually coming back and joining the Red Cross, and they're volunteering at the treatment center to look after the children who can't be together with their parents who are also at the center.
The main goal is to reach zero Ebola cases in West Africa. However, she says, it's important to start talking about investing in African health systems, training medical personnel, and greatly improving access to health care. The IFRC has called a meeting for the end of January to begin planning long-term operations in Guinea, Liberia, and Sierra Leone. Joe DiCapua, VOA News, Washington.
Meanwhile, the World Health Organization says the number of new confirmed Ebola cases in Liberia is declining. Liberians were once at the epicenter of this regional epidemic, but several parts of the country have not reported new cases. Some medical staff are returning to work amid renewed vigilance. It is an important sign of progress. VOA's Anne Luke has this story with reporting in Monrovia by Prince Collins.
The Dolo Town Health Center, just outside the Liberian capital, is open. Mothers bring their children for vaccinations against polio and measles. People come in for tuberculosis treatment and HIV counseling. A midwife here says she delivered 10 babies since they reopened a month ago. The sheer normalcy of it all has the feel of the remarkable. Liberia's health system collapsed in August as Ebola bore down on Monrovia. Dolo Town was one of two suburbs put under an abrupt quarantine. The quarantine was lifted 2 weeks later, but the community continued to battle Ebola. Locals say more than four dozen people are believed to have died here of the virus. Even now at year's end, a local task force watches for sporadic cases. This newly opened clinic is not taking any chances. They built a special waiting area in front. Midwife Kebe Carmo keeps a close watch.
In sitting on here, please. You know, we shouldn't set jam up, you know, beside one another. Because you don't know who is who. Ebola patient might be among us. We are protecting you and protecting ourselves.
Staff wear gloves. They screen for Ebola symptoms like fever and send those patients to a larger care center nearby. The clinic has a stock of PPEs just in case. That's the full-body protective gear staff should wear if they see a suspected Ebola case. Physician's assistant McFarlane Kurkula says getting those PPEs persuaded most of the nurses to return.
That's why we are having the courage to work right now.
As Ebola surged in Liberia in mid-2014, many medical staff didn't even have gloves. More and more of them were getting sick. Health workers went on strike. Most clinics shut down. People were afraid to go to the clinics still open. It was tragedy multiplied. The government said people would die of treatable, preventable causes. Childbirth complications, malaria, respiratory illness, high blood pressure. International Ebola response ramped up in Liberia in October. At year's end, the epidemic is not over. But the worst of it may be. A few big hospitals have reopened. Small community clinics like this one are edging open their doors.
Yeah, morning. I know everybody washed their hands before. If you didn't wash your hands, then you need to do that, please. Because if you don't do it, we don't allow you to even go inside that either.
Every morning, the Dolo Town Health Center gives out tickets. Staff triage cases, giving priority to the most critical. This used to be a 24-hour clinic, but now they see just 25 people per day. It's a safety measure. Non-urgent cases are told to return the next day. Kukula is a strong believer in what he calls holistic care.
I want to say thank you for coming. We want to feel relaxed. Everybody here will get treatment before 1 o'clock.
Kukula says they will soon start the day's consultations. But first,
we ask one person to give us a short song so that we will start.
And with that, a new day begins. And look, VOA News, Dakar.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Here are some of today's news headlines with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Damme.
Thanks, John. Somali authorities say six people are dead after Al-Shabaab militants attacked a military base on the outskirts of the town of Baidoa. Witnesses tell VOA's Somali service that gunmen attacked a checkpoint manned by Somali soldiers early today. The ensuing battle left at least 18 people wounded in addition to the six dead. The casualties included combatants from both sides. Italian authorities have taken control of a cargo ship carrying hundreds of migrants that was abandoned at sea by its crew off the coast of southern Italy. Italian Coast Guard officials were lowered today by helicopter onto the deck of the Azadan, which apparently set sail from Turkey. The ship, sailing under the flag of Sierra Leone, had no crew on board and had lost power in rough seas as it floated about 40 kilometers off Crotone on Italy's heel. Authorities estimate there are about 450 people still on board, including women and children. Most are thought to be Syrian. And finally, searchers say they will employ underwater detection equipment to recover bodies and wreckage from the crashed Air Asia passenger jet after the weather has improved slightly today. Indonesian officials say 30 bodies have been retrieved after more than a dozen were recovered earlier today, many of them by a U.S. Navy ship. The Airbus A320 was carrying 162 passengers and crew when it disappeared from radar on Sunday. And that's a look at some of today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Dam.
And that's our show for this first Friday of 2015. We now leave you in a dancing mood with this gospel song, Lingala Ya Yesu by Pitson.
Don't get confused. Ni le grand president. Pitson. Presidenta yake
Imekuwa muda sasa baba sijakuimbia lingala baba Nimekuwa nikijishughulisha na marege na maraga My blues zikafanya mimi nkalala Sasa nimeamoka baba naimba lingala Waliniambia lingala poa nifunge mshipi juu ya tumbo Na nitue kilingala eti beti lingala reza moke Wakani Poa nionge katikati ya wimbo eti
naongea sina kitu
mimi nasema lingala ya Yesu haikuangi complicated ukipewa kagitat ukipewa kagitat unainua mikono tu
Tunaletwa na orchestra demo power
We've been listening to Pitson with the song Lingalaya Yesu. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. Join us again next week for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.